and then Gary helped me understand that. He's like, well, doing a thorough inventory and review at night sets you up for the morning. You're clear in the morning when you're starting to go through the day. But I answer the questions. I do what it asks. Was I resentful today? Most of the time it's, yeah, I was. And this is what I was resentful at. And I'll talk about it briefly if I'm doing this with somebody or I'm doing it in a conversation with my Creator. Have I been selfish? I answer that question. Dishonest or afraid? Do I owe an apology? I just answer the questions. Have I kept something to myself which should be discussed with another person at once? If something comes up with that, I immediately call my sponsor. If I can't get my sponsor, I call somebody else. I don't wait with that stuff. And if I can't get a hold of somebody, I talk about it the very next day as soon as I'm able. The great thing about doing this too with somebody else is like you're thinking if you want to be naughty during the day, you're like, I'm not going to do it because then I got to tell them about it later tonight. Seriously, that's kept me in check a couple times. What could I have done better? Was I thinking of myself most of the time? Of course, I'm always on my mind. Yeah. Truly. Was I thinking of others and what I could pack into the stream of life? I love that line, packing into the stream of life. That is a great thing to take into a meditation. What does it look like to pack into the stream of life? And I could talk to you about my experience, but have your own. It's kick-ass. Take that into meditation. But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. And it's not about me. It's about other people. It gets in the way. I start squandering the hours that could have been worthwhile being of service to you if I am drifting into remorse. And in early sobriety, I mean, every time I thought about myself, it was not a good story. It was not a happy, fun story. I was bad. I was a piece of poo. I'm never going to be anything. Look at what I've done. Look at, the mistakes I made. I mean, just on and on and on. It was all negative, all of it. And just feeling bad about myself. And, I'm never going to be anything. I'm never going to go anywhere. I'm ruined. I'm damaged goods. I mean, just all that stuff. On and on and on. And I'm happy to report today that rarely happens to me anymore. And that used to be a regular occurrence. And that rarely happens today. And I think it's just from trying to live this way. And I'm just not consumed with myself like I used to be. And all of the things that I didn't like about myself have been treated spiritually and put to good use. And I think that's why I just don't drift into that stuff. I do get mad at myself sometimes, but I discuss it with my sponsor and we move on. I wish I wouldn't have done that. I'm mad at this situation or I'm mad at that person, but I'm mad at myself because I made that decision. I wish I wouldn't have done that. I wish I would have paused or I wish I would have thought this out or talked to you first before I made that decision or took that action. But then move on. I don't want to mental masturbate it, There's no fun in that. Sounds a little exciting, but, never goes anywhere. So, step 12. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. Well, what are other activities? When prayer's not working. When going to a meeting isn't working. When having coffee with another drunk as a friend isn't working. Writing inventory isn't working. That was a sad day when I couldn't work some magic with inventory to make myself feel better, which I used to do quite often. carry this message to other alcoholics. And to me, it means this message. They wrote it down for us so that we wouldn't mess it up, but to carry my experience with this message, not my interpretation of the message, but my experience with the message. Carry that. That's what works. This is what has depth and weight. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And that is my experience today. And that's has changed my life and changed my experience in living. There's very specific directions in here on how to be of service to another alcoholic and how to help them, how to talk to them, how to approach them, what to do, what not to do. I've made every mistake that's in here. They tell you don't talk from a spiritual or moral hilltop. I've done that. You know, they ask you not to lecture. I've done that. I've talked to people and not been convinced of their own alcoholism and tried to help them and make them into alcoholics. I've done everything you're not supposed to do. I've made all kinds of mistakes. But I've always tried to be there to be of service. So I haven't ruined anybody or damaged them where they can't be here. So, you know, get out there and start helping people. You're going to make all kinds of mistakes. Who cares? Go do it. Seriously. Don't sit around and wait to be the perfect sponsor or carry the perfect message. Just go do it. I called Don one time, and I was all, you know, upset about something. I'm like, Don, I got to go through the steps again. It's time for me to surrender again. He just laughed at me and said, go find a new drunk. Go take them through the steps. I'm not going to sit here and do this with you. You don't need to go through the steps again, you navel gazer. Go find somebody to help. And they talk about in here that if you get busy with this, if you get on the firing line of life, that your life is going to be disrupted. And they go into great detail about what that's going to look like. Phone calls in the middle of the night, Bernadette calling you early in the morning. Hello. Juanita, are you sleeping? Can I touch the top? Hello. But that happens. You know, you're gonna have drunks in your home. I used to bring drunks home. Alex finally said, Jesus, can you call me first? You know? I live here too. You know, get there, consult with them. And you know, I've made all kinds of mistakes. I've done things all kinds of crazy. And it's been fine. It's been fine. So when somebody asks me to help them, I do not say no if somebody asks me to sponsor them. I never say no. If I am convinced they are an alcoholic, if they want to live, and I ask them those questions. Well, I want to find out about them. I want to know, are you an alcoholic? I want to hear their experience, and I share my experience with them. If I'm convinced that they're alcoholic, I ask them, do you want to live? If they say yes, then I say, are you ready to go to any length? If they even hem and haw, I'm like, we'll talk about that later. I don't even waste my time. Because I'm getting ready to invest some time. If they say they're willing to go to any length, I say, okay, these are my criteria in sponsorship. They must make a minimum of 3 meetings a week. It's a must. It's not an option. I want to know which 3 meetings those are. They must get a home group. I don't care if it's my home group or some other home group, but it must be a home group that's healthy and active in the structure of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's imperative that they start learning how to be committed to something, because commitment is not an alcoholic's forte. It's not. They got to be willing to make a commitment to that group, which means they've got to be there unless they are dead sick or out of town. They must get a job in that home group. They don't have to be through the steps to get the job. They don't have to be through the steps to start being of service. A lot of times I'll tell them to put their name on the list at Intergroup, which is like our central office, that they're available for rides if they've got a car. So that if they get the call, they say yes. And I explain that to them right up front. If you get the call, you say yes and you go. You go get them. They have to meet with me once a week for an hour and a half. And it's not an optional activity. If they cancel it more than three times, we're done. I'm not wasting my time. They meet with me for an hour and a half until we're through the steps. Once they're through the steps, I expect them to start helping other alcoholics. And I demand respectability. Be a respectable member of Alcoholics Anonymous. For the women, I ask them to show up fully clothed at meetings. That's a big deal. You know, don't show up at a meeting with your ass hanging out, your belly hanging out, you know, these low-cut shirts, you know. I mean, it's nice to look at, but you're not here to create a distraction. You're here to recover and find some new woman to help. That's why you're here. Once you've gotten, you've woken up spiritually, it is your job to carry this message. And if they're not willing to do that, then we part ways. And that's okay with me, and I tell them that we will be friends. Now, when I first started sponsoring, that was not okay with me. If they were not willing to do that, I would try to convince them. I would chase them down. If they weren't making the commitments, I'd be on their butt going, what's going on? You agree to this. Da, 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 da. You need to get over here. Lots of pressure. And I mean, I instill the fear of God, you know? And it doesn't work. It doesn't work. So what I have found out is, and I'm just very clear about what my expectations are, and if they're brand new, I tell them my own experience. You know, when I was brand new, I was in a meeting every day, sometimes twice a day. But that's up to you. This is the minimum requirement. The minimum. So, and that's what we do. Now, if I got a really hard case, and I want to see if they're really willing, which I've done with women that have come to me multiple times to sponsor them, and then they fall off, and then they come back. I'll tell them, I want to see you at my house at 5:30 a.m. And that's when we're going to meet. And then sometimes I'm hoping they don't show up because I want to sleep in. truly. But I set the bar high to see if they're really willing. Because they've had their opportunity the easy way. And then, you know, and then they back out or they decide they don't want to do it and then they come back. So I'll set the bar high. Meet with me every day at 5:30. And we will get busy taking these steps. That's a commitment from me. So I'm willing to make that commitment if they are willing to make that commitment. I'll do it. If somebody says, yeah, I'm willing, yeah, I agree. And that way, too, I don't have to fire anybody either. They fire themselves. I have only maybe let go of two people in my entire sponsorship career. And I truly was not helping them. And that they were not hearing the message from me. It was not happening. And we were just in constant conflict. And that's a waste of their time and mine. And that's something I'll say too, you know, if you don't want to do this, this is fine, but let's part ways and let's stay friends, because you and I will be in conflict because this is what I do, and you don't have to do it. It's totally up to you. And that's what I do. Not everybody does that. Some people are stricter, some people are not as strict, or whatever you want to call that, but that's what works for me, so that's what I do. Some people will come along and they will they'll get on board with it and then they'll fall away. It doesn't bother me a bit. It frees me up. If somebody fires me, I really I don't care. It frees me up. I used to get very attached to that though, and I would get my feelings seriously hurt. Sponsorship meant ownership to me for a long time. That you were mine. You must never leave me. You must make me look good. You must become an outstanding AA member. You know, and all that stuff. And everybody's on a different path and on a different road, you know. So sponsorship is not ownership. And I would get highly upset and just come after them if they weren't doing what I'd asked them to do. I would mucho inventory on it. Mucho, mucho. And it's been great because I've learned a lot about myself and my character defects through sponsorship. And it's, you know, sponsorship is one of the biggest gifts that I've been given in Alcoholics Anonymous. I know I'm not the answer. If I don't have experience with something, I send them to somebody who does. And I used to get, you know, I talked about this a little bit. I used to get very threatened if I didn't have the answer, if they heard the answer from somebody else. Because I don't want them leaving me or thinking that somebody's better than me. And it's all good experience, really good experience. It will put you into the stream of life. It will put you on the firing line of life. There's a thing in there that says don't hesitate to go to the, I don't know, most sordid place in town. If you are on the firing line of life and your motives are good, you can go anywhere. And that's been my experience. I've gone to the worst places in Richmond. Have lived in some of the worst places in Richmond. We go anywhere. If we get the call, we go. That's how I've been raised in AA. I don't sit around and wait for it to happen. We go. We go do this. And like I said before, Don's like, you got to put action on these directions. You got to quit studying them. You got to quit thinking about them and go do it. Go have an experience with it. So that's what I've done. So, and now I've got this incredible fellowship around me, not only with the women I sponsor and the women they sponsor and the women they sponsor, but also within my home group and also within the community at large in Richmond, Virginia. And we're very active and we do a lot of things together. We have camaraderie together. And I don't, and I'm going to share this with you, and this isn't to toot my own horn. It is what has happened as a result of me doing what AA talked about and what Bill Wilson talked about. Gary was down doing a retreat with Jerry Elkins, and I was there with a lot of the women I sponsored, our sponsorship family. And he was telling me later, he goes, or him and Jerry were talking, they're like, we've never seen anything like it. Been all over the country, never seen anything like that. With women in AA, which I thought was a damn shame. And it made me realize how lucky we are and how true these promises are, that if you will get busy trying to be of service to other people in Alcoholics Anonymous, you will create the fellowship that you crave. And it's beyond what I expected. And I'm just I am a small part of that. I got to be a part of something that is bigger than me. And I get to participate in something that is bigger than me. It's incredible. It really is an experience you must not miss. And I've had my heart broken by women I've sponsored. 'Cause I've loved them dearly. And they've had to go different things, do different things. This one gal that I sponsored, and her and I are good friends today, her name's Debbie, and when Don would come to town, he would stay at her house, her and her husband's house. And I sponsored her, and I had set up this was before I would be totally honest with anybody about who I really was. I would just talk about the big book and what we do, and I was talking about perfection. So what she perceived is, I can't be honest with you because I need your approval. I can't be honest with you because I'm going to let you down. You think I'm a bad AA and all this other stuff. And I made it so uncomfortable for her, and there was so much pressure there from me. And Don was there when all this was going on. She had to leave the nest, and it broke my heart. And I set it up where she couldn't hear me anymore. And when she got into real trouble, she couldn't hear me. And she was at that point where she's in real trouble. She couldn't hear what I was saying. I had set this up so badly where her dependence and reliance was upon me. And it was just awful. Now, I can't take all the responsibility for that. She had to go do what she had to do, and she relapsed and all that stuff, and she's back in A&A now, and she's actually my next-door neighbor, and I love her, and we're very close. She's like my sister. But I learned a lot from that experience. I cannot create the environment where I'm putting their dependence upon me. That this really is about me taking them through, walking with them through these directions, and getting their dependence on a power greater than themselves, because I can't solve their problem, even though for a long time that's what I was busy trying to do in sponsorship, was trying to solve their problem. And I can't even solve my own problems, and I'm trying to solve yours and fix yours for you. I can't do it. So, you know, God's large and in charge, and God can take care of it. I don't need to fix it. I don't need to fix their life. A lot of times I get uncomfortable because they were unhappy or they were uncomfortable. And like I shared with you before, I can't rob them of their experience. It's the worst thing I can do to an alcoholic. My desperation and pain has been the biggest gift that's ever been given to me. Good, strong sponsorship will never rob you of that. They will let you make all the bad decisions in the world that you want to make and say, good luck, kid. Report back, let me know how that works out for you. You know, and when I come dragging with my tail between my legs, I've learned something. I've been leveled. It was invaluable. Emerson had a quote, and I'm going to say it incorrectly, but it's about what happens in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous when we start getting God directed. We have the circle and the triangle. It's never ending. Life is a circle. The seasons are a circle. There's life, there's death, there's rebirth, life, death, rebirth, all that. That happens in AA. We come here, we die, we get reborn in spirit. We go through these different seasons in sobriety, we die again. You know, all that stuff. It's one big circle. Emerson talked about that we as individuals draw our own circle, and from that circle, other circles are drawn, and other circles are drawn, and other circles are drawn, and it's powerful. I'll never forget Juanita sharing at Fellowship of the Spirit when she was talking about the tree, the sponsorship tree, the circles that had been drawn. How one person can have a huge impact on those around them, and in ways they don't even know, in ways that they may never hear about. You can touch people and may never hear about it. It's incredible stuff what happens here if I will let it loose and get out into life giving this thing away. That's one of my favorite prayers. Father, let me be filled with your love and spirit. Pray it flows through me and into lives of others. It's not something I get to keep and hoard, which sometimes I want to do. It is not mine. I have to give it away. And getting active in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a great way to start experiencing that. There's many ways to be of service in AA. And if you say yes, you will be called to do it. And you'll get the opportunity to do it. Not only in your home group and in sponsorship, but also at the service, your area level, in your district, at the state level. And that's an incredible experience in itself. Watching drunks, it's like herding cats. I'm telling you, I just went to an assembly 3 weeks ago, the beginning of October. I was amazed because nothing came to fisticuffs. Everybody was pretty agreeable. You know, I was like, what happened? The Pied Piper of Kitties must have been present or something, because usually it's like herding cats, trying to get drunks to agree on anything. Some people just like to disagree just to disagree. They don't care. They just want to be the minority opinion. Just to be it. But that's good. We need people like that. So if you get busy also, you're going to become a leader in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's a powerful responsibility. And it will happen. If you become active and you become willing to give of yourself, you will become a leader. It's a fact. Haven't seen it not happen. So there's principles for leadership. The place that Don directed me was in our World Services Manual. If you want to know how to be an effective leader, the directions are right there. The principles that we try to live by are right there. It's good stuff. Check it out. Does anybody have any questions about sponsorship? Or carrying this message? Or experience they want to share?
I have a question. I think it's pretty well answered. Sometimes I'll tell the sponsees that if you have a question, you know, stop me because I'm reading the book to them. And and so sometimes I'm stopped and they talk about some other way of, well, I did this in Eslam, or whatever, there's some other kind of thing, and it goes on and on, and I'm like, you know, I don't want to just be controlling and say, stop, we're just talking about this.
That's not controlling. I say, stop, we're talking about this.
I appreciate that, but we're going to do this now.
That's right.
Like after the second word?
Well, you know, and I've sat down with people and they start just going on a tirade and they want to talk about their entire week and they want to just start talking about all this other stuff and I will tell them, you know what, call me with that stuff or let's set up time to meet before a meeting or let's have coffee. This time that we have decided to do together is for us to walk, have this experience together. And that's what this time is set up for. I'll listen to that other stuff later. I have no choice. My God, Don, listen to me whine.
I like to have them identify with over a week, but like you said, not go on and on. That's a whole other program. On and on and on.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. And it's about identification.
Right.
Yeah. Any other experience or is there any questions?
I really appreciate what you said. I realized for myself in ways that my sponsees have been my biggest teachers. Because who I was when I came in is not who I am today. And I do think that life goes on, and circles go on, and things shift, and the people who were the people I knew. In fact, Don said something one time that brought this. More to me than anything else. He and Jackie used to come back to Maine a lot, and you know, and share. And he would always say that he would close to bed and he'd look over the next morning to see how God had changed Jackie. And their relationship became right there. And I understood that for myself, anyways, that I was, and I did this, especially like with my daughter. When I came in the hall, she was 10, and she's 44 today. And so it was like, I was relating to her like she was 16. And I wasn't relating to her on where she was. And my sponsees, because I've been in for a long time and I've sponsored people for a long time, they're not the people that I met when I first started to sponsor them. And so how I relate to them has, I've had to learn how to shift with that. And I recently lost a couple that taught me more about my reaction. Now, what they did didn't make any, Don used to say that, didn't make any difference what they did. My reaction to it was the problem. And, you know, I was wrong. It didn't make any difference, you know, what they're doing. You know, what, it doesn't make that they were right either. It, you know, what I did and how I reacted to them because of a situation that occurred was inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to make amends for that, and we had to go on. I do agree that for me anyways, a relationship is closest sponsorship. I used to, you know, I loved when Tom and I used to say that, you know, you walk in there, and, you know, my sponsor doesn't have to knock.
Mm-hmm.
And I was raised that way. My sponsors never had to knock. They just walk right in. It's time to walk in. But how I walk in is different than I used to walk, how I used to do it
mm-hmm.
10, 15, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't walk in the way I used to walk in.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a certain respect that I have to give that God is working with them, and it's what you said. But there is still a point where if I'm still in namesake, their sponsor, I'll walk in. I'll give so much time. But when I'm not feeling good inside, and I can check inside, why am I feeling why I'm feeling with somebody? Then, because I think sponsorship is the result of the first prior 11 steps.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sharing my personality with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not here for that. I'm here to develop a relationship with my Creator and hopefully demonstrate what my Creator is doing with me. But, you know, I'm human and I am going
mm-hmm.
to have these things. And if it wasn't for the ability to work with others, we couldn't see each other. There's some people here with a lot of time. And I think we can take, for me anyways, it's been my experience in sharing with other people with a lot of time, and what I heard you say, is we're not done yet.
Mm-hmm.
We're not finished. We're not cured. And there will be these steps I don't have to take through today with my drink, and I already did that. But, in fact, I've been sober longer than I was drinking. And why am I still coming? Because there's still areas of my life that I'm agnostic, I'm living independent from God.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know it
mm-hmm.
until I had somebody give this to me. And thank God for sponsorship, because my sponsees have actually been the ones. I was talking to my sponsor, and I talked to my sponsor more today than I did.
Mm-hmm.
But I was talking to my sponsor, and I said, this situation happened with these sponsees, and they're... What happened with these sponsees was very inappropriate. It really was very inappropriate. And so she said, well, it was. And I said, yeah, but the common denominator is that I was there. I got to look at that. Let's take a look at that. And I did. And I was sharing this recently with some friends. And I said, what I realized is that as painful as that was, I couldn't have learned it any other way. I could not have learned it any other way, because I love those people a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the ones that and that's the trouble with sponsors, you really love people.
Mm-hmm.
And they hurt
mm-hmm.
when you watch some things that happen to them. But it taught me about my reaction and my possessiveness and where I was as a person. I don't think this goes one way anymore at all.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us that are long timers are perceived one way, and that's too bad, because
mm-hmm.
we're still, you know, what is that thing, the Ken Wilber's thing, you know, we're on the mountaintop, but then every day we're carrying water, and, you know, we're doing the drill,
mm-hmm.
we're just doing the drill just like anybody else,
mm-hmm.
and I will say one thing that I think has to be brought more and more, because now I'm a long time, and I heard this guy say this one time, that they picked up a white chip, and this person had a long time, and for about a year he got up and did the chip thing, and everybody clapped and hugged him and told him everything. At the end of the year, he said, I didn't drink, but nobody was coming to me. So don't forget your long timers. I mean, don't set them someplace
mm-hmm.
they're not. We're all just doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're all doing the same thing. I've recently moved here. I've got to tell you, some people just realize I'm really drunk and helping out. And I'm barely getting a grip on the job.
Very true. Yeah, I was going to say something. And then Marcy, who I've sponsored the longest, she goes, I love it when you mess up. I love it when I get to watch you do this stuff. And it also lets me know you're human and that you're going to make mistakes. And for so long, I didn't want anybody to see the mistakes I made. But it's one of our most valuable assets in helping other people is letting them see that we mess up. Because it's so easy in sponsorship for them. And if we can allow it too, which is dangerous, not to let them put us on a pedestal. And that we are human, that we're on the same path. And I tell you, with Marcy, I didn't even like her when I first started sponsoring her. I was finding ways to try to ditch her. And she just offended me at every level. She used to, she was really dirty. She was like a hippie gone goth. She didn't shave. She smelled bad. She used to wear an iguana, a live iguana, to meetings. And she was just annoying. And I didn't like her at all. And today, I love her. I love her. And she's traveled with me when I had to go make amends, and I've gotten to do the same thing with her. I mean, just amazing things. She's wanted to fire me several times. And I had to tell her, go take a look at that. We were talking last night about, and I almost hate to say the word never, because you know what that means. But I don't ever want to let go of my current sponsorship relationship. My idea is I will never leave my current sponsor unless my sponsor's message gets funky or my sponsor drinks or just really gets off the path. Because there's too much to be gained from a long-term relationship. There's like these humps that we have to get over in sponsorship as we're growing up. And it's almost like a kid, you know, you think your sponsor doesn't know nothing. There were many times I wanted to fire Don because he wasn't treating me right. Or he wasn't listening to me. Or, you know, he wasn't being nice to me. And he didn't understand me and he didn't really care. Or whatever my mind was coming up with. But I stayed in there. And I'm so grateful that I did, that I didn't cut and run. Because I wasn't getting my way or my feelings were hurt. I really appreciate what Mary just shared, because sometimes I have to really watch how I talk to people and how I respond, especially if they're doing something that I know is heading them down a rough path where I know they're going to get slammed, and I hate to see it. I don't want to see it happen because I love them. I want to protect them. You know, and I totally understand that. And I've made a complete ass out of myself numerous times. And I've had people fire me, and it breaks my heart. And in the back, though, I'm always thinking, yeah, you'll be back. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I see them go get some mamby-pamby sponsor, and I'm like, yeah, you just couldn't handle it over here where it was heavy, you know? I mean, just, you know, my little mind gets a hold of it, and it's like, it doesn't matter. Where have I been wrong? Where am I wrong? So, anyway, what are you going to say, Tom?
Just something that you said, and I think Mary Thayer was saying it now. I'm trying to put this together. We spent a bunch of time with Bill Seat in California just in the last month. And he was saying that when he sponsors these guys, that they'll say, well, I need to go through the steps again. And he'll go, no, you don't. You need to get a newcomer, take them through the steps, and you will have a step experience. If you need the fifth step with me, come back and we'll do that.
Yeah.
You can write some inventory, fifth step with me, but have your step experience with me. And I heard that and I wanted to scream hallelujah, right? Mm-hmm. A guy in Denver once told me, not Don, but a guy in Denver who I asked to take me through the steps, he said, how long has it been since you've gone through the steps? And I said, well, you know, formally with somebody, it's been quite a while, but I do, you know, my steps when I take other people through. He goes, no, that's not working the steps. That's not it. That's not your step experience. And later I thought, that is my step experience. I mean, I'll be working the first step with somebody. I'll see something about my first step I never saw in 21 years. Mm-hmm. Literally, that happens constantly to me. I'll see things in the third step. in every step that I never, ever saw before.
Me too, yeah.
And I think part of that is the less defended thing. You know, it's like my defense is on up. Like, let's say you're taking me through the steps. It's like, I got to be good for Valerie. You know, I got to show her how, you know, adept I am at working, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But if I'm taking you through, all my defense is down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really important piece that we miss sometimes, that you are working the steps, all of them, when you take someone else through the steps.
Mm-hmm. Right on. You know, someone else said to me, and I see this a lot in meetings, I've talked to the women I sponsor about it. A lot of times, you know, people will ask us for a phone number and we give it to them, and we don't get theirs. And we don't call them. And I started thinking about, what if Bill Wilson had just, like, given his number to Henrietta and said, yeah, pass it on to Bob if he wants to talk to me. Tell him to call me. And that's the attitude in AA today, most of the time that I see. Is, yeah, well, you want my number? Here it is. Or they pass around the little thing, the where and when, and everybody writes their phone number on it, which is great. But I need to be getting their phone number, too, and then calling them. Because I remember when I came in, I was terrified to speak to people. Terrified. You know, the saying in our home group is, man, and the guys say this, if a newcomer girl shows up, you know, it's like, you know, it's like fresh meat, man. They're on it, competing for that chick. And the guys are like, damn, it's going to be a year. Because they know they don't stand a chance. Because the women in our group are like, you know, I mean, they don't mess around. They don't mess around at all. And if some guy gets a hold of one of the girls, they don't hesitate to say, that's a newcomer, stay away. Go somewhere else, buddy. I mean, the women are pretty fierce. It's kind of cool. Hey, but we need somebody to protect the men from us.
What about the suggestion of
the newcomer guys? Because let me tell you, you know, you hear a lot about male predators in AA. Females can be predators too. Prey on men. And a lot of people don't see that, and it's very true. Women can just be a little sneakier about it. A little more clandestine about it, but there are female predators in Alcoholics Anonymous as well.
What about the suggestion, men for men, women for women, sponsors?
I think that's very important. I know for me, I don't think I could have handled a male sponsor in early recovery just because I probably would have tried to run my game. You know, when I... So I've had female sponsorship until I got Don. When I first asked Don to sponsor me, he told me no, and that he would be my AA friend and my spiritual friend. I didn't like that answer, so I kept calling him anyway. And we were up in Maine, and I was trying to get up the nerve to ask him again. And finally I did. I said, Don, please sponsor me, please. And I was really nervous and scared to ask him. And he goes, you dummy. We've been acting in that capacity for quite some time now. Why do you have to label it? And I'm like, because I do, you know. Because I do. I'm attached. But on the whole, I think it's better if men sponsor men and women sponsor women. I don't know that I could have a... the stuff that happens when men are working with men is magic. The stuff that happens when women are working with women, or you got a group of women together, there's some serious power running around. You know, Don said this one time. He's like, man, you get a group of women together, there's some serious power going on. We don't mess with that. I don't want to mess with that. I don't think I can have it is paramount to me to have strong female relationships. And I do. I'm at my best when I'm with the women. A lot of my teachers, though, were male. A lot of people tell me I sponsor like a man. The men that I have sponsored, some of it has stuck, but most of it hasn't. And I don't know if it's a male-female thing. I don't know. I know I won't sponsor a newcomer male. From my experience, it just hasn't worked. But there's a lot of other experience here. That's just been mine. I think if you have strong women who are living this way and can help you, and you hear them, get a female. But there's also something to, if you hear somebody talking, I don't care if it's male or female, you hear them, go get it. For me, whether it's male or female, for me, I hated women when I got here. Hated them. Because I saw them as competition. And, you know, and I had all the crazy thinking about women, you know, they're going to take your man, they can't be trusted, they're competition, you know, I'm a guy, I hang with the guys, I'm not some mamby-pamby wussy woman, you know what I mean? I'm a biker, man. I mean, I had that kind of, I carry a gun. You know what I'm saying? That kind of mentality. To me, being a female was weak. I associated that with weakness. So I don't think I could have had a male. And I know I would have run my game. I would have tried to. So for me, my experience has been good. I had women sponsors initially, and they helped me get through a lot of that stuff. So, and I talk to a lot of women too, but my main teachers in my life, when I look at who's had the most influence on me, it's been men, male teachers. But then back to Mary's point, I sponsor predominantly women, and they've been my greatest teachers as well. So what the hell do I know?
But I want to say, I identify with you. I have sponsored men, and I do now, but I never sponsor a newcomer man. And when I sponsor a man, they always have to have a man sponsor too. Mm-hmm. So that's like a requirement for me. And but again, they have to be in for 2 or 3 years because I don't want to be their mother now. Before
yeah.
When I was younger, it was something else. But ba-bam, 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 ba-bam. When I came in, I had a husband and wife. Uh-huh. And the husband actually... I guess that with a man, they don't get so much into the story.
Mm-hmm.
And and the people that I've called, and it's so agree with you, when I hear with my heart and not my head, and I know something's really, I don't care who it is, you call. Mm-hmm. And mine have, I didn't know Don Coyes, I called him. I didn't know Bob Darrell, he had something on a tape I wanted to know, I called him.
Mm-hmm.
Just all of these people, calm. Dawn didn't make any difference.
Mm-hmm.
If I wanted something that I heard, and somehow there was some clarity, that was, I don't know what it is on mm-hmm. that. That's true. But then there's the polypistols of the world,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that, and there's many powerful ones too mm-hmm. that I have talked to both Al-Anon and David.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, once we realize we have the common solution, then we walk shoulder to shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
But it does take growing up a little bit.
Absolutely.
Quick clarification. You said something about not calling women. Was that women that you're already sponsoring as opposed to like getting phone numbers at meetings or something like that?
Oh, say that again? Were you talking to me?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, Roadrunner.
Roadrunner, you've been christened.
So once they're your sponsees, then they have to call you. But you were talking about getting phone numbers from mm-hmm. newcomers at meetings. Rather mm-hmm. than just giving them your phone number.
Well, something Mary said, and I've grown an understanding in this, everybody's different. And what people need, and the big book talks about it, put yourself in their shoes so you know how they need to be approached. My approach used to be one way, which is cram it down your throat. And it's had to change. So it depends who I'm dealing with. But once we start getting engaged in this, and we're moving along, and I let them know, you know, call me when you need me. You're welcome to call me every day if you need to. But call me when you need me. Call me twice a day, whatever. You know, and it always works out. You know, sometimes, you know, I'll go through phases where some people are calling me every day, and then their stuff straightens out, and then it's somebody else. You know, it always works out. I'm never inundated all at once. Don never called me, unless he had something for me to do. Then he called me. With some of the women I sponsor, I never call them unless I've got something for them to do. Other women, I will call and check them. Are you okay? Jerry, who sponsors me today, has called me several times when I've been in a jam to see what's going on. But I don't expect that, and I see that as my responsibility to contact my sponsor. It's not my sponsor's job to run me down and fix me. You know, that's a choice that I make, to be accountable to him.
You know how you have a lot of sponsees?
Uh-huh.
And then you always never say no.
Uh-huh.
At the end of the meeting, you always stand up or raise your hand. For what? For sponsorship.
They
ask, do they call it
that? How we do it in our home group is we say this is a registered home group. If anybody needs a sponsor and needs help finding a sponsor, please see a home group member. Would home group members please raise their hand? And I raise my hand. But if we even sniff a newcomer, it's fierce competition in my home group. No joke. Fierce competition. If there's a newbie there, it's a race at the break. And that's how it should be. We should be all over the newcomer. All over them. Welcoming them. Because they're terrified. And they don't fit. You know, my God, when we stopped drinking, I was coming out of my skin. I was so uncomfortable in my own skin. So it's important that we welcome people. You know, it's so easy to fall into who you know, catching up with people. How you been? How is your week? What's going on? Let's talk smack about that one. You know, it's easy to do that when you show up at your meeting because they become your friends and your family. And with the women I sponsor, I'm like, don't even talk to me about stuff at the meeting. I'm busy looking for new drunks. I suggest you go do the same. So that's why we're there. We meet frequently so that newcomers may find the fellowship they seek. Well, if I'm not talking to them, what kind of fellowship is that? If I'm not welcoming them, what kind of fellowship is that? That's what they're seeking. To be understood, to have a solution. Glad you're here. You're welcome here. Come on with us. There's always room for one more. Come on, let's go. You know, once you get into amends, it's time to put on your good big girl pants and get on down the road. Or put on your big boy pants and get on down the road. It's time to get into action. Faith without works is dead. The work is helping other alcoholics. The work is carrying the message. That's how I've been trained up. That's what I do.
So how about if you're taking someone who's been sober for many years, but they've never been taken through the book?
Yeah.
It's like a newcomer.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've done that with, right now I just started working with a gal who's 28 years sober. She kind of had the experience I had before, bits and pieces of the big book, never a full surrender. And I'm just having a blast with her. But we just do the exact same thing. And I don't have any judgment about that. I don't think she should be somewhere other than where she's at. I don't think I'm something special because I have less time than her. I look at that as two drunks on the road. And I have just enjoyed being that with her. She emails me every Monday morning and we meet. We've been through the steps and now we just meet once a week for lunch. And we just have a blast together. I just love her. I mean, she's from Detroit. She got sober in Detroit. She's out of control, eccentric. She's got really thick, black gray hair that's just like all over. She's got this crazy laugh. She's like, and she does this. I love it. I'm just like, you know, you just can't help but laugh with her, you know. I mean, she's just, she's crazy. So it's really, it's, I was honored that I got to walk with her and do that with her. She just adopted two kids from Guatemala, and I mean, it's just great to be a part of people's lives and to share that experience with people. So it doesn't, does that answer your question? Yeah?
When you first have a newcomer's policy and you have been with them for 9.5 weeks and have them with you, do you have them call you every day? Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I do. I take that back. I've got a gal right now, I've asked her to call me every day.
So it just depends on?
Mm-hmm. Depends on who I'm dealing with. For her, she just needs that daily accountability. And she leaves a message if she doesn't get me. And I've also got her calling other women. I've asked her to call two other women in the fellowship too, because she's so isolated and she hates women. So I'm going to get her talking to women. That's what we do. And she's starting to have a nice experience and realize that we're not all out to get her. And that women can be pretty cool too, and she's starting to develop relationships with people, and she's just at the beginning stages of that. So she loves men now, man. That's why we got to call in some women, because she's on the prowl. She's looking. The sicker the better. She likes them. She's gonna fix them. She's going to get them trained up, you know what I mean?
We were started talking before about, you know, one of the conditions you said was pushing the fact of being willing to do whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. But we all know about people who come in who are so desperate. Mm-hmm. First week, second week, they're willing to do whatever it takes.
Mm-hmm.
They get detoxed, they get a little sober.
Mm-hmm.
Physically sober.
Mm-hmm.
And they're no longer doing that. How do you
deal
with that?
I don't do anything. I mean, literally, I don't do anything. I used to do something.
You just wait till they just fall over by the wayside.
Well, you know, if I've just started sponsoring somebody and, you know, because we'll do anything when we're desperate. And then once the desperation leaves, we can start getting a little complacent. I may call and check on them and see what's going on. When I see them at a meeting, I'll ask them what's going on. But I don't chase them down anymore. I just don't. If they eliminate themselves, they eliminate themselves. It frees me up. I just don't try to make that happen for people anymore. My brother's a prime example, man. He was on fire while he's here for a month. He gets back to California feeling better, working better, having a better time. He's like with the man whistling in the dark. Nothing to see here. The desperation's gone. I mean, what can I do but wait? I mean, we can't do anything but wait and pray for him.
Does it happen a lot to
you?
Or?
Yeah, it happens. It happens. Very few stick and really get on this path. Most people in AA, that I've seen, and for the time that I've been around, what I've seen, it seems like very few really get on this spiritual path of service and really explore this spiritual life that's here. I don't know else to say it like that, except like that. So most of us don't make it. Not to be all hardened about that, but that just, it's sad, but it's parts is parts. Unfortunately. I'm all hard and crusty about it now. Anything else? Are we done?
I have a question. After you've taken your sponsees through the steps, do you meet with them once a week after that, or...
Mm-mm.
Or once in a while, or what?
They call me, they need to talk to me. And if they want to meet with me, Sundays is like my day that I meet with people. And I start in the morning, and sometimes I'm meeting with 8 people in one day, sometimes it's 1 or 2. Sometimes I'm just here in inventory, it just really depends. Right. But they call me, we see each other. If they need to talk to me, we'll meet for coffee or lunch or something. But no, I expect them to get out there and start helping other people. And I also expect them to, you know, carry the message. Go into treatment centers if you're not sponsoring somebody. Get into busy and correctional work. Carrying a meeting into there. Yeah, I'll meet with someone unless they need to. And we also get together regularly. I mean, we'll lock ourselves away a couple times a year or once a year and as a group go through the steps together. So. And they talk to each other. So, yeah.
How about as you're taking them through the 4th step?
Nope, don't meet with them. There's nothing to say. As a matter of fact, I love it when they call me screaming and yelling about something because then I get to pull a Don on them. That sounds like the meat for inventory. Add it to it. No. I mean, if they got something going on, I mean, I'll talk to them, but I don't really want to hear about their life problems.
No, but helping them with their inventory.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, if they're stuck or they have questions, absolutely. You know, and I share inventory with them so they can hear what it sounds like. I'll have other women that I sponsor share inventory with them so they can hear it from more than just one person. Especially if they're new to writing it, it's kind of like overwhelming. No, we're not meeting to like review what they've written every week. I don't do that.
Because when I used to just say, okay, now you're on your own till we get to the next part of it. That's mm-hmm. your inventory. Okay. And most of them, 3 of them, never got anywhere. And mm-hmm. now I'm meeting with someone and we meet every week and she asks me some questions and she keeps going on. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering.
I think that's great.
Good idea.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we'll meet if they have any questions about what's going on. Or we'll talk on the phone, whichever works out best. So are we done? Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed being here.